Welcome to the Qualified Tutor Podcast. Here at QT, our mission is to provide teacher training for tutors. If you are a motivated tutor and you love to learn, the QT Podcast will inspire, motivate, and support you to improve your practice. Because tutoring is a small job that makes a big difference. Hi there, and welcome to the next installment of our podcast series with us here at QT. Welcome to Lucy Williams, an inspiring and an experienced tutor who has set up a close network of tutors to be able to provide the clients that she's built up over the years with the same great service. Wonderfully excited to have you here today, Lucy. How are you doing today?
Not too bad, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That's okay. So, Lucy, I thought I'd jump right in with how did you get into the world of tutoring?
Well, I guess like anyone, it's a bit like, you don't mean to do it for the rest of your life and you kind of fall into it. I did linguistics and phonetics with French and Spanish at University of Leeds. Always loved languages. I had a huge passion for them. But I guess the classic thing when you finish university, didn't really know what I wanted to do. Very fortunately, my old French and Spanish teacher from school was working at an international boarding school in Switzerland, and there was an opening for a gap assistant for the year. So she said, come and do that. So luckily got the job via the school and via her, which is really wonderful. And I went out for a year. It was amazing. It was called College Alpin Beausoleil in a place called Villars, about an hour or so from Geneva in the mountains. And I was a gap assistant, so I was kind of a junior house parent, and but kind of, you know, I guess in a good way to get a lot of experience, a lot of odd jobs. Fortunately, because I spoke French, I was on the reception, and then, you know, took the kids out skiing with the instructors, and had lots of, you know, little odd jobs throughout the year, which I really loved. Luckily, through my language skills, I got offered to do some tutoring. It was half an international school, but half a complete French section of the school. And therefore, a lot of kids in the international school, all the education was in English, but some of them were from all over the world. So you can imagine Mexico and Italy, Japan, and some of the English didn't fill up to scratch. Therefore, I did some EAL tuition on the side. Also, for the French section, a lot of parents, many from the UK, but other parts of the world too, wanted their children to kind of go in for this fully immersive year and just think they'd come out fluent in French, which I completely understand their meaning behind that. However, some children, having never been exposed to French and suddenly completely in the education system, found it quite hard and difficult to keep up and maintain. Therefore, I took, so me and my colleague kind of made this department, which was for kids in the French section who didn't speak French, and I would like tutor them on the side, sit with them in lessons and translate on the spot, take them out of some lessons to help them do their homework and teach them more French.
Kind of like a teaching assistant in that way.
Yeah, and I suppose, I had a few classes of like, I guess, two people's max myself, but then yeah, I was in some lessons, like as you say, yeah. And I remember at one point there was one child, he was actually from Chelsea in London, and his mum wanted to go to school for the year. He did, he was about 13, but his mum wanted to have a qualification. You might know about it, being a French speaker, but there's the DELF, the Diplôme Éducatif Français Langue Étrangère. And basically it shows that you can speak a level of French. And she wants him to do the B1 level, so it's kind of pre-GCSE, the equivalent in the UK. So I tutored, I knew he'd gone quite well, tutored him quite heavily throughout the year, and did his exam in Geneva, end of the year, did really well, which was really good. But I remember that one-on-one thinking a bit like, oh, hang on, I really like this. I remember like doing my research for the lessons. It was very much about him, what he was good at, what he was bad at, what he needs to work on, the translation for the lessons and everything else. I really enjoyed. I remember that spark being a bit like, I think I can do this, and I think I want to continue with it.
Yeah. So, in a way, that was maybe your first introduction to the world of actually tutoring as opposed to teaching. Or had you done some tutoring before that to introduce you to this teaching assistant?
No, 100% was my first time. I always said I didn't want to be a teacher or anything to do with education. Didn't like it, didn't want it. And ironically, at the end, not I didn't like it, but I just never thought about it. I just thought I'd be a translator. I really didn't want it to do, but I knew I wanted to use French and Spanish. And at the end of that year, it was an amazing year. Like, my boss was from Valencia and he spoke to me in Spanish. My Spanish became fluent. I was living in the French part of Switzerland. I spoke French the whole time and I adored it. I went to, you know, school trips to Tanzania, climb Mount Kilimanjaro. It was an insane year. And at the end of it, they actually asked me to stay on and maybe do a PGC there and continue. But because of my head, I was like, I just don't want to be a teacher. Which to this day, I know I wasn't very good at. I didn't want to be. I actually chose to leave. And at that point, I was about 23, and all my friends were in London and having these cool 9-to-5 jobs in the city. And I wanted to, you know, be like them because that was in my head at that age the thing to do. And so I went back to London, where I'm from, and I got a job as a French PA for 6 months doing a 9-to-5 in the city and just despised it.
So what subjects do you tutor now?
Well, luckily, kind of after that, my tutoring formative years formed. I kind of knew what I wanted to teach and do. I always wanted to be just teach two tutor languages, French, Spanish, and English as an additional language. But after that job, kind of my tuition came into fruition, I suppose. And by that school, there was a family who was based in Switzerland, in a place called Gstaad in Switzerland, and they wanted a private language tutor full time. So through various contacts, I met with the family, the dad worked in London, spent a lot of time there, had interviews, etc., and ended up going out to, back to, so 6 months in London, and I was like, bye, back to Gstaad, and I was tutoring again then full-time. It was a very different setup. I lived in a chalet in Gstaad, in Switzerland, with this family, who were lovely. I lived in, you know, staff accommodation there, and there I tutored all subjects, but in French, Spanish, and English. So I was from Key Stage to GCSE. So one day the mother could be like, could you do maths in French today or geography in Spanish? Because it was fairly basic level, I could do it. When the kids got slightly older, I thought, oh, economics in French probably isn't going to happen because I'm not skilled in economics. So I specialise, my expertise is in those three languages. But like on a basic level, I have done, you know, English and maths and other numeracy and literacy subjects.
So Lucy, we tend to ask this every time, and we have got some very, very amusing answers with this so far. What kind of tutor were you, Lucy, and did you ever have a tutor yourself?
No, I didn't. I want to think I was quite cool, but I wasn't. I was a massive geek at school. Just like,
it's also a common answer.
Yeah, at the time I was like, no, I'm not, but like looking back, I was. No, I just basically I'd worked, and I was very lucky. Prior to year seven, I did work, but I didn't really know how to, like, I mean, we used to have tests when I was younger, but I didn't really know what revision was or how to revise. When I was really young, like in five and year six, I went to a really good school called Surbiton High School. And I remember from year seven, I think they just, the good thing about that school, many good things, but they just instilled a really good work ethic into me. And yeah. I remember even my year seven exams, it's, I don't know if it's a good or bad thing, the amount of pressure I put on myself, but I had to do well and get above 70%. And my parents were never like that. They never pressurized me at all until they say they haven't. But I just really wanted to work hard. I guess I was surrounded by lots of students who were achieving really high marks. And not that I was at my death, but I do, you know, you do want to be the one who's getting 40% and they're all getting, you know, 80 to 90%. So from then on, I think I'd like to think my work ethic was quite strong, and I always had very nice reports. My parents' things were good. So yeah, I shouldn't say a loser, but I guess a bit geeky. And I just worked really hard. And I worked hard at the subjects, all subjects, but I think the ones that I really loved, like I remember in year eight just being like, to the point where I looked forward to my French lessons, mm-hmm. those subjects I used to really work harder because I just genuinely enjoyed it. And even to this day now, I'll research, and this sounds horrendously lame, but I'll research certain tenses because I really enjoy it for my lessons. But, you know, I enjoy, even now on the job, I'm still learning new words and vocabulary in different languages. I'm still learning new structures. And that, I just think it's really cool and I really like it. So I think because of that, because I did really put the work in throughout GCSEs and A-levels, I didn't need a tutor because I had my own work ethic. But I do understand why some children might not have that, or they find some subjects so difficult where they need that help, and that's totally understandable, especially with languages, because I think I'm quite lucky. It's the one thing I was good at. I'm not overly amazing at, I'm not very mathematically or science, you know, really, really strong, but I can just do it, I suppose. So I'm quite lucky in that regard. Therefore, you know, I'm more than willing to help others because I enjoy it a lot too.
Yeah, and one of the most common attributes of a successful tutor is that love of their subject that they are able to instill in their students, knowing your subject inside out, and then having that flexibility and ability to pass that knowledge on to a tutee. So I think you have absolutely defined what makes a very good tutor initially is that it's someone who loves studying at school, someone who has enjoyed studying after school, after university, even if they went to university, and someone who can pass that love on to their students, because one of the best tutors are those that seem passionate and interested about their subject. If you have a very disinterested tutor, then that's going to pass on to the student and they'll make much, much less progress. So I think that's very encouraging to hear, Lucy, that you still look up tenses that you like in French just for the love of studying them. So in that, maybe this leads on very nicely, but what do you think motivates you as a tutor, Lucy?
I find the job incredibly rewarding, which to the point where I never thought I would. I remember that first student that I had, my first tutee, I suppose, was the one in Switzerland who did this exam in Geneva, the B1 Delft exam. And I remember in September 2012 when I first met him. I was quite sad, actually. I guess I saw him in the playground, and because he was in the French section, you know, it was no one's fault, but he couldn't speak French, so he couldn't really talk to his peers. And in the playground, I saw him by himself, and it was really upsetting. It was horrible, because I've never seen that before. I've never, you know, I think we've all seen the playground growing up at our, in our, you know, schools, how sometimes people are rejected or excluded for maybe certain other reasons, but in the UK where I've been brought up, it's never because of the language. It's never really been, I've never seen that, and I was quite taken aback by it. To an extent, I kind of understand it. If you're, you know, if you want to speak English and, you know, you're 13, you're playing with your mates, it's, you know, you can't speak a different language, I kind of get it. But it was incredibly upsetting. So we actually had quite a close relationship, because we're both from London, and I think we wanted someone to talk to. So not only did we get on well, but because I really liked him, I think we had a mutual respect for each other. I worked a lot to get him to do well in his exams. And he worked very hard. And I remember that experience instilled and enlightened like my love of tutoring. And I guess I kind of therefore wanted to do it. I suppose it sounds a bit bizarre, but on a selfish note, because I love having lessons and I love translating and I really enjoyed it. And I was like, this is what I really want to do. I never really thought about him. Well, I did think about him and his lessons, but I never thought about, you know, what his results have an impact on me. Anyway, we went to the exam, we did this exam, it was very important for him and his mother, which I totally understand. I got the results in the summer, and I was back in London at that point because the school year had finished. And I remember getting his results, and he did superbly well, to the point where he got above, it was all above 80s and 90% in the listening, reading and writing. And I remember getting his oral mark through, and when he got the exam, I flunked it, and they asked me, what would you do in a day out in Lausanne? I didn't know where Lausanne was, and Lausanne's in Switzerland, and we were in Switzerland, so I thought, oh goodness, what was happening? And he got his results, and he got 100% in his French oral exam.
Wow.
To see, and obviously that was him, and he worked hard, and I'd like to, you know, I helped him out and gave him resources. I don't want to say it was all me, it wasn't, but you know, seeing somebody when they cannot speak a word of the language in, you know, 9 months prior and 9 months later, to be out in the playground with his friends, having a laugh, speaking the language, getting full marks in your speaking exam, I remember being like, oh my god, that makes me feel really good. And I never really realized that would have an effect when the students did well too. So I think how rewarding it is when students do well, and knowing you have a part to play in that, that really motivates me as a tutor.
Yeah, and seeing that reward that you've given them, even in their eyes, there's also the part on their exam paper where they get a very good mark because of the tutoring that you've done with them. But seeing them understand the point just there and then in the session really mirrors this rewarding factor that you've just mentioned. I think that's certainly something that very much motivates me as a tutor, is seeing a child understand a point or write a really good essay, and you give them positive feedback there and then, and their eyes just light up because they feel that they're being given that direct positive feedback. They feel that they've achieved something. What did you think being a tutor was like in your first few sort of days, weeks, months of tutoring? Did you envisage it being like it is now?
No, and again, I have to say, I did started out really because I liked it. So after those 2 years when I was in Switzerland, had the amazing part of family and made a place in Mallorca, so I'd go to Mallorca during the school holidays and nearly tutor the children Spanish. I adored all of that, but then all the children, they went to boarding school, so I got a bit older, so there wasn't really much work for me, so I came home after a couple of years, and it was amazing 2 years. Like, you know, I traveled the world with them, they're an amazing family, and I'm still in touch with them to this day. It was really like a remarkable experience for me. But when I came back, I thought, okay, I want to start up tutoring on my own. And which I did in September, no, like January 2016, I think. I remember doing it because I wanted to do it. But then over that course of that year, I prior to this, I've only really had two strong tutees who I've got to know really well. with the family I live with. But then over this course academic year, I met loads of different students, loads of different people. And again, I really like prepping their lessons and, you know, doing this research and that. But then, you know, I've never had, that was my first year of seeing a load of, you know, new GCSE results and A-level results. And, you know, getting those messages being like, oh, I got an A, or I got an A star, or thank you, I finally got this. And I can go to Oxford because I've got this, or I can go to this university. I was like, it was loads of different ones, and there's a flood of it. And again, I thought, oh, I'm actually doing this because I like doing it. But that side of it, again, I kind of forgot how good it really kind of was. I've never had, you know, I had that one mark with that boy who had done his exam in Switzerland, but I didn't have a kind of array of all these different official national exam results that came to me. And again, I realised, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is why you do it. People can go to schools they want to go to, people can go to university they want to go to, or just speak a language they want to speak, and enhances communication, in my opinion, is very, very important.
So what lessons do you think you've taken from your teaching, your early teaching in Switzerland, to your tutoring? This is often a topic that we touch on, is whether the person is going from teaching to tutoring or tutoring to teaching. Is there anything that you can take from your experience in one to the other? Or do you think that they're so different that you've approached them both differently?
I think they're very, very different. And I take my hat off to teachers in many ways. I think they have an incredibly hard job, and, you know, with the marking and then math students. And also, I realised I haven't had a huge experience teaching. The one that I did have was when I was in Switzerland at the school, not with the family. And one of my colleagues had too many hours in her school week. And so they just said, look, it's literally half an hour, it's year 10, IGCSE English. They were really well-behaved children. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing, like, classroom when there's huge glass window looking at Mont Blanc. And it was like, you know, ridiculous experience. And she wrote the lesson plan, and I was just like, can you just deliver it? That's all I had to do. And it's not that I didn't like it. They're really nice children, but it just made me realise, and they weren't that bad, misbehaved, but, you know, I would see them talking in the back or doing this, that, and the other, or addressing more than one person. And I just realised, one, how much classroom management is, from what I would think, about 50% of being a teacher, which is very difficult. And I'm not very controversial, and I find it hard to tell an array of kids off. I've realised in my experience, turning one kid off is actually quite easy, but turning more than one off, I don't like being that person no one likes, and that's a stupid thing to say, but I just remember I don't like it. And also, I just, the idea of having to try to manage everyone's level on a fair playing ground, I knew I wasn't good at it. My instinct went, I don't think you can do this, but I think you can do the one-on-one. I think you're better at that. And then coming to do more one-on-one, and after that, teaching and meeting lots of other students, I've realised, for me, one good thing I'd like to think help is when you do initially meet a student, you have to have tried to build on the rapport. It doesn't always work, and that's life. You know, you don't always have these relationships with people who are going to gun with them, but you need to try and build some sort of rapport. And also, I just think if you can, even if you're doing A-level, even if you're doing a primary French with a four-year-old, you have to make it fun to an extent. So one way I remember doing that is I had a GCSE student. He was doing Spanish, and he just hated Spanish. He told me he hated Spanish, and fair enough, he was like, I don't like it, I need to pass, I hate it. And I was like, that's fair, I used to hate physics, so we're all different. But I just asked him what his interests were to try to, like, bring resources to the lessons that he would at some level engage in. Even if they're in Spanish, he was still engaged with them. And he was a huge fan of astrophysics, and that's fine. So I was like, okay, come work it out for me.
And so are you now as well.
That's a stretch, but I kind of went out and did all this research, and I found all these articles in Spanish on astrophysics, and, you know, and especially like TED Talks, or, like, you know, visual things, and, like, you know, reading things. That's a good thing about languages, you can do, you know, listening, reading, writing, and oral skills. And I remember I showed him this TED Talk, and I showed him this article on it as well. One thing he was like, oh yeah, this is the, God, I've forgotten now, some sort of comment or something like that that had been in the news.
Hayley's comment?
Anyway, and then he read it, and he was, and I remember that in the article, there was an example of a subjunctive or a tense we were trying to work on. And again, like you alluded to earlier, there was a light bulb moment. He was like, oh, that's how you use it, oh, that's how you see it, that's what that word means. And in some level, I'm not saying he adored Spanish, he didn't afterwards, but I kind of got through to him, I'd like to think, a bit. And, you know, bringing those resources and making it kind of more themed towards his interests, I'd like to think he enjoyed the lessons a lot more. He got a good mark at the end of it, you know, he got a B, and he was predicted a D, so I think he's improved in that area. And then he liked it, and we got on, and we had a, you know, relatively good rapport. So I think knowing the students' interests is really important, and thinking they have been at school all day, giving them an extra lesson. And, you know, I hate the idea of just sitting there with a textbook, opening it and doing nothing, and then getting on with it, because one, they may have done a lot of school, and two, that, you know, if we're getting paid for our time, I think we have to do our best to utilize it to show what we're worth, and that involves being creative and coming up with interesting creative lessons so your tutees like you, and hopefully they get a good mark at the end of it.
Have there been any other ways that you could share with us how you've been able to build rapport with tutees?
Definitely have, like, talk to them, have a chat with them. I know we're already there sometimes an hour, sometimes a bit more, but, like, if I just come in straight away and be like, right, this is what we're doing straight away, and just get on with the vocab test or get on with the new tense, the presentation or the reading we're doing, I think, again, it's a bit, like, in order to be able to build rapport, you have to know who you're working with. It's having a conversation. What I try to do, because I, as you know, I think everyone, young person, would do this, especially when you're working with young students, is they will go off on a tangent, and I try to just speak and talk to you for a good 20 minutes so they know they're wasting half the lesson. So what I try to do is, normally at the start of each tutoring session, we'll have a chat, but then we have a chat, ask them about their weekend, or what they're doing this weekend, yeah, or what they're doing in half term, or asking, but it will be in French or in Spanish or English, whatever language I'm teaching them, in order for them to utilize those skills. And again, to get them more relaxed, you know, not to go kind of, sometimes when you do drive at 4:30, you're at 5:00, they have just got in from school. So I think, to, you know, everyone needs break, everyone needs a kind of like downtime a little before they kind of get their brain working working again. So a lot of it, yes, getting to know them, but, you know, the beauty that's trying to do a different language to hope that, you know, boost their learning size is key as well. And I think this is more, I guess, alludes to working with younger children, but keeping them engaged, and sometimes making the lessons not stop start, but like sometimes a few different activities. If I work with children who are 8 or younger, you know, I do a lot of presentations on my laptop, so that kind of, like, you know, lots of colour, lots of smiley faces, lots of plant pot moving around to the ER verb, and to know to take off the infinitive, to keep them engaged, to keep them looking at it, but also keep them interested. And then doing a short activity on that. But then it could be, you know, I think I alluded to it earlier, the beauty of languages is there are 4 key skills that you need to be able to be competent in order to be able to use the language: listening, reading, writing, and speaking. So kind of breaking up the lesson to utilize those 4 skills is quite key and easy, and keep the lesson quite interesting and fun. So, you know, doing like a listening exercise, we could watch like a TED talk on something they're interested in, be it, I don't know, Italian TED talk on feminism, or I don't want to bring YouTube too much into my lessons, but there is wonderful resources for lots of songs and French nursery rhymes, especially for teaching young children. So kind of doing listening and speaking in that regard. Speaking I alluded to earlier when talking to them at their weekends, and then again reading something, which I again mentioned earlier, that they're interested in. So using the 4 skills, breaking up the lesson and doing it centered around their interests, and, you know, interesting and fun, be it with colours and different activities. I think as well, I like to keep it varied and interesting and motivated, and also they remember it a lot. Like, sometimes I've heard this 4-year-old be like, oh, we did a vocab thing in French today, and I remember the sunflower pot on your screen, and it was the sun, and that was like the sword. So, like, I don't know, little things, if you're visual learner, I guess that would really help. But sometimes when I do find it's effective, I think, okay, keep going with that, because obviously it's working, especially for that student.
Yeah, exactly. And being adaptable, being able to change your style for each student you have, is one of the most important things about being an engaged and ultimately successful tutor. But another point that we often discuss here at the QT is we often have tutors coming to us, or the tutors that we spoke to in our webinars and our podcasts, is there are students that struggle with material, and there are students that struggle with in classrooms, and there are students that struggle with learning in general. Now, if a student is struggling to understand a point that you are explaining, or to understand a topic that you have been helping them with, and they really just are struggling to understand it, maybe it's due to just the difficulty of the topic, or maybe it's due to other factors such as it's been a long day at school, or they're tired, or they're angry, or whatever. What have been kind of your best methods for remedying this? Have you found that there are ways in which you can alleviate a child's kind of demotivation for learning, for being in the sessions?
I think if it's an ongoing difficulty, using the methods that I adapted to and mentioned earlier, if it's one where they're just really unsure and I kind of have the innately, I think, well, okay, they can get this, they just really need to kind of, you know, look at it, then it's breaking it down and making it as easy as possible to learn to look at, be it, you know, a very simple presentation, a very simple exercise, a very simple worksheet. But the key there, I think, as well, is repetition. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying, you know, everyone's perfect at languages and is good at it, but to an extent, one can learn one basic concept in any language. One can make somebody recite the endings in the present tense in French, or recite the word for lamp in French. Again, each week, that's kind of going to go in. So I think a lot of it is repetition. A lot of it is patience. And you have to, again, if they're unsure of it, then go over it again and go over it again and use it in a very simple format, be on a very simple worksheet and break it down small bits. If it's just present tense they're unsure of, then that's fine. Let's not do the whole thing. Let's not do all the irregulars. Let's not do all the different endings. Let's not do all the different verbs. Let's look at one section of it for that week and go over it in really slow formats until they understand, and then next week we're going to begin the lesson there. If they're still showing up to misunderstanding, then you go over it again and again. So I think a lot of repetition, and I understand that for an exam board you have to cover an array of things and lots of information. However, I am very much the opinion where it's better to be good at the foundations of a language, to be very good and highly skilled and you know, the very base of the present tense. And yeah, say you can't recite all the irregulars, or you can't recite all of the fancy tenses as an example. It's better to have a good foundation and solid skills in certain areas, as opposed to trying to spread yourself out too thin and not be as good or skilled in all those areas. So to sum up, I'd say repetition is key, and breaking it down as easily and as possible for them.
Yeah, no, wonderful. And sometimes that's hard to remember when you're preparing tutoring sessions, is that the child can be at a very basic level with this learning. You know, it's sometimes hard to think that you have to really go back to the early steps. And that can sometimes be the hardest thing, is that you go too high with your initial explanations of the topic. So I remember I've been doing some math tutoring with a student. And you know, I assumed too early that they understood basic concepts like converting fractions to decimals, for example. So the work that I did assumed that they knew that already, and it was really causing them issues. So I had to take some steps back and start from the building blocks again. Now, maybe that's more common in maths, because there really are building blocks to later knowledge. But even with English, you know, don't assume that they can just launch into a creative writing piece, because they haven't worked on that initial vocabulary in order to build up an argument. But Lucy, I just kind of finishing off here, I'd really like to know a little bit more about what you've been doing very, very recently with setting up this small network of tutors. I really feel there is a lot to learn there for other young tutors who are thinking of doing the same thing.
I suppose just recently, I'm quite lucky, as I've been here for self-employed freelancing tutoring in London for the past 4 years now, and I've had incredible experiences and met so many great, amazing, interesting people, and I feel very fortunate and lucky to say that I generally love what I do. The good and bad thing was, many problems, any job I suppose, but the tutoring is a very small window when you can actually do it. Most tutoring, if you're not, unless you're a homeschooling placement or adult tuition, generally takes place after school. So you start about 3-4 o'clock and you end about like 9 or 10 o'clock. That's my working schedule most days, just fine. I'm used to it and I like it. However, if it's all in person, unless you're very lucky and you know the clients are all next door to one another, you can only really fit in about, I would say, 2 or 3 a day if it's all in person. I'm therefore a huge fan of Skype, because I'm able to do various clients during one day, which I do quite like. And then at the weekend I tend to work more 9 to 5, because that's when, you know, kids are generally all off school. I'm quite mean coming on the weekends, but, you know, if it's necessary, then I'll be there. However, luckily, through kind of building up over the years of tutoring and applying to agencies and trying to become a private client and be that through building a website or putting ads in magazines or word of mouth, etc. You know, pick my business cards loosely in cafes. I've managed to acquire more clients, which is really good, and more private clients. Fortunately, people have been so lovely, and through word of mouth, the demand's been quite high. And that's it's really nice to know that what you do is good. You know, I guess what we do, I love being self-employed, but I don't have an appraisal. We are in bosses, and that's great, but am I doing it the right way? And, you know, training. So
I think you are, Lucy. I think you are.
But I think sometimes, you know, the GC results, then the results kind of, you know, are akin to, oh, okay, they managed to get the A, so hopefully we're in the right direction. However, sometimes if I cannot take all these clients on, I kind of want to lose them, and I'm becoming more aware. I wasn't aware of it at all when I first came back to London to start up on my own, but I'm now a lot more aware that tutoring is, I don't know, can I use the term booming industry? I suppose it is. It's very popular. It's booming. I suppose it's down to the exams getting harder, schools getting, you know, a lot more competitive. And it's great that there are lots of clients out there. But I also realize the good thing is there's lots more tutors out there. So trying to, you know, get to know some more better, be it going to tutoring conferences, you know, hearing about your mum's best friend's son who's looking into it, which I guess how I met your contacts initially, and then, you know, then you and everything else. It's kind of trying to create a network where I can give especially budding tutors but new tutors this work, be it if they want to be a tutor full-time, or if it's kind of, you know, on the side they're looking to get into acting or something, or another freelance job where they haven't got a full 9-to-5 and they're looking for this kind of work. Putting clients in those directions of my other contact is what I'm trying to do at the moment, because just knowing the work is out there is good. I don't want to turn people down, and want to make sure the work can be given to somebody who's also capable and willing.
And so if you had the top three tips for tutors in the same position as you, maybe a few years before this, the top three tips for expanding their practice, should we call it like this, what might they be, do you think, Lucy?
I would say, if you want to kind of stay away from, nothing wrong with agencies, I rate them, think they're great, there's many wonderful tutoring agencies in London, I do generally believe that, and I work with them still, and they're really, really good. And however, if you would like to get more of your own work, which can be easy sometimes, be it financially or just knowing it's just you and the client, I would say maybe, you know, put some ads out in either local magazines or try to get a online presence in order to try and build your own clientele in that area. Another tip, definitely get, if you want to be totally professionally freelance and self-employed, I suppose, get your own website, because people tend to Google and look online for tutors now, as opposed to like, you know, the yellow pages, or look them up in a book. The last thing I would say is, God, not to get my business hat on too much, I suppose, but the wonderful thing is there are many tutors out there, that's great, and we're all very good at what we do generally. However, I suppose it's good to have a USP. So, you know, what's your unique selling point? Figure out why you tutor, what are you good at? See if you can find it in any of your testimonials or what your clients say about you, and try to promote that in the best and feasible way, because that will, I think, give you a bigger fan base or a bigger clientele, and they'll realise they'll want you for a certain reason, be it to your personality, be it to something you do when you work, or in the resources you bring. There's something that's, you know, they can pinpoint that's really good about you, find that and then promote it, because that will make you a unique and good and budding and hopefully flourishing tutor.
Yeah, and what a brilliant sentiment to end on, Lucy. Thank you very, very much for sharing your thoughts with us, and also providing such kind of helpful insight into how to maybe do tutoring in a slightly different way. We here at QT are constantly looking for how to, you touched on the fact that the tutoring industry perhaps is booming at the moment, and I would agree with that, especially with the rise of online tutoring. So how can it be done in a different way? How can it be done to help those people that really make the tutoring industry tick, which is of course tutors themselves? So it's been a real pleasure to have you on, Lucy. Thank you very, very much. Just looking ahead to the next installment, I'll be talking to Sophie Parker, a brilliant young tutor and founder of a company called Tutor in a Box, a company that's changing the game in the field of learning resources and how to provide those to parents and children. Julia and I met Sophie at the BET 2020 conference, and we're very, very excited to hear Sophie share her thoughts and experiences, as we have been with you, Lucy. So I will thank you again, and I'm sure we'll be speaking to you again very soon.
Thank you, Lila. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Qualified Tutor podcast, where tutors share their expertise to support the tutoring community. We're always looking for motivated tutors to interview on the show. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, get in touch at podcast@qualifiedtutor.org. We'd love to learn from you.